our interest in this amicus brief was to try to take on this meme from the right and to see if we could start changing the atmosphere at the U.S. Supreme Court. They've not had a counter story. So I guess the first thing we did is we made a commitment to and try to gather every bit of evidence that they were putting forward. So that meant every affidavit submitted by any person. There were 60 some of them submitted in the protectmarriage.com case in California. All of the news stories that they had cited about incidents of intimidation, all of the YouTube videos that had been pointed to, anything additional that the Heritage Foundation had found, and to put this all together into a huge Excel spreadsheet with to kind of categorize it all as to what the allegations were, what was the source, who was saying it, what happened, and to look at the categories of things that they talked about: death threats, physical violence, threats of violence, vandalism, hurt feelings, insults, boycotts, loss of employment, all of that. And the first thing I think we wanted to say to them is, wait. Who is really the target in our society? You know, I mean, and we open by talking about hate crimes and the statistics of hate crimes and the fact that, you know, the LGBT community bears the highest percentage of hate crimes, you know, per capita in the country, that there were 29 LGBT-related hate crime murders in 2008. That's by gay community standards. FBI has a smaller number, but nonetheless, in the category of murders, more than half in 2008 and 2009 are in the LGBT category. We talk about school harassment a bit, about the fact that, interestingly enough, anti-gay violence rises during ballot campaigns. So the very irony of the fact that they are complaining about the things that happen to them during campaigns when we know, and we had that example in Massachusetts, the hate crimes in 2004 spiked in January and February during the Constitutional Convention matters in Massachusetts. And just the notion of discrimination against LGBT people in general in the country, which is not something that has gone away. And also to point out to them that part of the attacks are these ballot questions. And don't lose sight of the fact that these ballot campaigns that they are initiating are that. They are attacks against the LGBT community. Since the 1950s and the start of the use of ballot questions against African Americans, and then in the last 35 years against the LGBT community, where the count is now, if you count state and local, there have been 115 ballot measures against our community in the last 35 years. On all kinds of subjects, as you know, to whether it's to repeal protections or to prevent any protections from being granted, or to do things like in Oregon, where they had a ballot question that was essentially, they wanted to put into the law that every school had to teach that essentially homosexuality was abhorrent. And we know, and the Supreme Court knows this, they've had Amendment 2 from Colorado, which they overturned in 1996. So we lay all of that out there to say, okay, come on, let's get real about who is under attack in this country. It is not the powerful right wing. Remembering the context here now is revealing the names of people who signed petitions. And they can't show not one incident of a person who signed a petition in Washington who was subsequently harassed or intimidated because they signed a petition. They don't have any, not a single one. So they say, well, but we're allowed to look broader than that. We're allowed to look under case law. We're allowed to look at anywhere where anybody in a similar circumstance was in this position. You know what? They can't find one. Even though there have been 18 statewide anti-gay ballot initiatives in the last 10 years in which there have to be, well, we say in the brief, hundreds of thousands of petition signers, and there really have to be millions of petition signers. In that context, there is not one reported incident that they can cite of a petition signer being harassed or intimidated. Interesting, huh? So what they turn to is the California experience around Prop 8, and they talk about things. And they continuously say it's a coordinated campaign, as if the gay community has coordinated these efforts. I think that's a group slander, actually, which is a legal claim that you can make, because there is not a whit of evidence, and there couldn't be a whit of evidence. I mean, just like in any, do you think that the Republican National Committee coordinated all of the threats and harassment of Democratic congressmen who voted for the health care bill? Even I don't think that's true, you know. But some things did happen. I mean, they talk about death threats. So there's a coordinated campaign that includes death threats, and they keep talking about death threats. And, you know, it's like an echo chamber. You keep saying it, and then suddenly people say, oh, my God, people got death threats over this? Well, you know, in fact, it's true. There was a rally in Fresno sometime, maybe in August of 2008. The mayor, a guy named Autry, spoke, and a big evangelical pastor named Franklin spoke. And the next day, City Hall received an email that, in fact, threatened the lives of those two people. Okay, that was a dumb, stupid thing. The police investigated. They thought they found the person. Turned out it wasn't. They didn't have them. Don't know what has happened to that. But that's it. I mean, one crazy person sent an email threatening the life of two Prop 8 supporters. We had a Prop 8 campaign person who was also threatened with death. I mean, should we do a tit for tat? Then they talk about physical violence. People were actually assaulted. Well, you know, Phyllis Burgess from Palm Springs, California, who the counter story is, she was at a post-election our side rally in opposition to the passage. A nice, peaceful rally, and then suddenly appears a woman in her late 60s carrying a big styrofoam cross and pro Prop 8. She gets her cross taken away from her and stomped on the ground. The counter story is, of course, Ms. Burgess is a lunatic who puts herself in the public. She came to this. There is actually a story in the papers, though they don't cite this one, that she knocked down a disabled man to get in front of the camera. When she saw the TV cameras arrive, she goes right to the front, puts herself out there, and then this happens. And then she's gleeful. You can see her in some of the YouTube videos. She's not frightened at all. She's a pro at this, you know. I mean, these are the incidents. These are the incidents that they can point to. And they're bad, but that's a state of how many millions of people? All of the emotion of this event, does it make a campaign of threats and intimidation against the supporters? You know, and white powder was mailed to two Mormon temples and to the Knights of Columbus headquarters in Connecticut. That happened. Nobody knows if it was related to Prop 8. I'm willing to think maybe it was. It was at least it's in temporally close to the time of the campaign. But there was nothing since that indicated that that was true. It could have been a totally unrelated wacko who did that. That's a bad thing, but is it happening kind of regularly in heated campaigns now? Yes, it is something that happens. There are stories of vandalism, yes, and there's stories of vandalism on both sides, but again, should we get into tit for tat? What about boycotts? They are horrified about the boycotts that have happened. There aren't that many of them. There is something called Californians Against Hate by a guy named Fred Karger, and he is organizing boycotts around people who donated more than $5,000, and they've had a tiny bit of success in a few boycotts. But it's interesting to see the right complaining about a tactic that they have used so promiscuously in the past over any company that does anything slightly pro-gay. Now, I think that maybe I'll just end by, if I can find a good one here, because I looked at some of the things that the L.A. County Commission put out on 2008 for hate crimes, and they had 9 definite Prop 8 related hate crimes in the county, and they're pretty serious in terms of the ugliness of the incidents and the violence of a few of them, and here's the let's see if I can find a good one, because they put all these declarations in about all the horrible things that happened to them. One declarant complained that members of the country club have made rude comments to me about my sign supporting Prop 8, and that, quote, openly gay members of the country club have changed their attitude toward me. They used to greet me warmly, Now they give me looks of disdain. But anyway, there are a whole number of those like that. I mean, there's a woman who, what is she saying here? Her gay brother will no longer speak to her after she told him she might vote for Prop 8. She accuses the brother's partner of an ugly and inflammatory email, which simply said that he was upset, saying your views, among others, on Prop 8 has placed you in the camp of opposition to civil rights. Anyway, so we hope that we have succeeded, or will succeed, and the clerks will read, and we will start to change the court's perception of this, what Matt Coles has called the first urban myth of the 21st century.